I recently spoke at the Arizona Families for Home Education Conference. I'll share some of those thoughts with you here. We can take America back. Welcome to Culture Shift, the Barry Ferris Show. We are living in an American culture that has shifted from tolerant to cancel culture, from decent to rude, from optimistic to cynical, and from relatively safe to increasingly violent. But it's not too late. I hope to equip you with a historical framework applied to current events so you can lead and get America back on track for good. Hey, welcome back to the Barry Ferris Show, Culture Shift. We're all about freedom and your success. I recently spoke at the Arizona Families for Home Education Conference and interviewed several parents and some of their kids. The theme of our discussion was not limited to their kids' education, but expanded to how they can help take America back. Parents at the conference have decided to homeschool. In our home, we tapped into a combination of Christian school, charter school, and homeschool. Regardless of the path that works best for you and your kids, they will likely be much more productive and happy as adults if you're actively engaged in guiding their education. One of the moms I interviewed, Kia, from Mesa, Arizona, at the conference, put it this way on why she chose to homeschool her five beautiful children.
That's a good question, isn't it? So when we had our oldest, Cohen, almost 10 years ago, we started thinking about the natural things about his future. And there were families at our church that were already homeschooling. And we noticed something different about those kids. Immediately, we noticed that they were super comfortable having conversations with adults. They were very articulate. And that was one of the things that we immediately were like, ah, yes, we want that for our kids too. And we started asking questions. And the first thing that one of the husbands of one of the families at homeschool said to us, he said, go to the homeschool convention, get a feel for seeing curriculum up close, seeing the community, and you have time, because he was a newborn, and he says, you have time to decide, but get plugged in and start to figure out your why. So what we knew is we definitely wanted a Christian education for our kids, but we also knew that we wanted a lot of kids. And so we knew that private school was not going to be affordable, and we didn't want to add that stressful piece of trying to raise money or go, you know, ask our family to crowdsource their education financially. So we said, okay.
I asked her what she thought she could get from homeschooling that would be more difficult in another setting. Here's her answer.
The top two things for us is tailoring the education to each individual child's learning style and being able to kind of follow their interests and develop those. And then second, well, I would probably put it first above tailoring their education to their individual needs, is to have a foundation in Christ, like a very firm foundation in Christ. So those are the two things that I know that they could not get in another form of schooling or mainstream schooling.
This development is not new, but Kia and many other parents have decided to take the education and development of their children into their own hands. At the end of the day, every parent wants their kids to be clear thinking, productive, happy, and free to accomplish whatever's on their heart. But freedom's a fragile thing. With freedom, you can taste the fruits of hard work and perseverance. You can enjoy success, and even after you face significant failure, you can get back up and try harder with more wisdom. Without freedom, though, there's just no access to the American dream. From a parent's perspective, I can think of over a dozen ways the American dream is under attack. I'll just mention seven today. Number one, education. Our public school system of administrators and teachers spread leftist ideology, and they are engaged in a concerted effort to destroy the truth about America. They've eliminated accurate positive information about America's founding and triumph over evil. America was and is led by real people with human frailty, but they were not primarily racist, and there's no way you can say we were imperialistic. If that were true, Japan and Western Europe would be part of the United States today. There's a lot going on in the education realm that troubles me. Transgender issues, overt sex education, defiling God's divine order. But let's just look at the race issue. Number one, you got the 1619 Project, which kind of says everything is based on slavery. And they say that America is bad because it was founded to promote the slave trade. First of all, slaves came to the United States before 1619, including altogether 300,000 white indentured servants from the United Kingdom until the Revolutionary War. But an honest review of the founding of America decisively shows that the slave trade was not the basis of the founding of the U.S. Number two, slavery was bad, but the U.S. slave trade should be taught in a balanced and honest way. We fought a war against ourselves to end it. The Atlantic slave trade was worse in other parts of the world, by far. Coming back to the South, of the over 10 million black slaves who were hunted down in Africa and horribly sold in the Atlantic slave trade, 389,000 of them were imported to the U.S. It was horrible. It was wrong. But it's important to note that at the peak of slave ownership in the United States, 28% of the families in the South owned slaves, but 72% did not. And as terrible as it was in the South, it was much more brutal in Africa and the Middle East, where they killed slaves in some instances for sport. There's no blameless race. Slavery and racism is sin, wherever it is. But the American idea, derived from the Christian idea, is that you are only guilty for your sin. You're not guilty of the sin of another. If you want to see a lot more on slavery, you can look at some of the most recent previous podcasts and videos. Third thing is critical race theory, very popular to talk about right now. That's a derivative of critical theory, which is a derivative of Marxism. In the 1920s, Marxist intellectuals in Germany admitted that Marxism wasn't working. And of course it wasn't. They can't even accurately define how the price of a good is determined. So they came up with an adjustment to replace bourgeois with biz. Critical race theory takes it one more step and replaces biz with whiteness and the worker with black, so that trapped worker from the original Marxist ideally is now just black, regardless of what he's doing. And the ultimate remedy is to destroy all the institutions that are connected to whites. But what they forget is how many smart blacks actually impacted Western thought. What they're really against is Western thought. All whites are not oppressors. Whites are not racists by birth. And blacks are not all victims. The truth, according to black scholars like Thomas Sowell, is that fatherless people do worse on average than those raised in a home with a mom and a dad who are married. The second issue is election integrity. It is a real issue. I mean, voter ID is not bad. You need an ID to buy alcohol, to buy cigarettes, to open a bank account, to apply for food stamps, to rent an apartment, actually to see an apartment that you might rent, you need an ID, to apply for a job, to rent a car. You need an ID to get on an airplane. You need an ID to get married, to buy a cell phone, to pick up a prescription, to purchase nail polish, and you need an ID to adopt a pet. Voter ID is not restrictive. It just helps stop cheating. Number three is woke sports and business. The NFL, NBA, and NBA have gone all in, along with a bunch of companies, and they just don't respect the U.S. flag anymore. And men shouldn't be able to compete in women's sports. It's just dumb. It doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. And we should teach the truth that the U.S. system of due process is reasonable when it's followed, and it's not fundamentally racist. Fourth thing is police. They should be applauded and supported, not defunded and stripped of their authority. Crime is up in nearly all big cities. The fatherless create almost all the fatal crime. Protests should not become riots. We should handle grievances peaceably. Burning down retail shops is not peaceable, and those aggressors should be prosecuted, not set free after a one-hour jail sentence. This is critical because if you're running for your life and you don't feel safe in your neighborhood, you're not even thinking about the American dream. Number five is fear and control. You know, viruses have been a worldwide problem for quite some time. This last one was fatal for less than 1% of the population. Though it was very contagious, I mean, everyone in our family got it before vaccines were even available, and it was real, but we all recovered. Regardless, a virus should not be used as a mechanism to steal away freedom rights. We should not be weaponizing fear. If the government should do anything, it should focus on those who are vulnerable and allow the healthy and low risk to go about their lives freely. Mass compliance on any level is troubling. And it's not American. Number six, censorship. where do we start with censorship? Large companies that operate under the protection of a utility should function like a utility. In other words, the provider of city water should not be able to decide which house gets it and which house does not, even if the utility is privately held. Big tech is effectively a utility. People who have built platforms of their own influence should not be censored, even if you don't agree with them. The big tech companies should not be allowed to intervene in politics and censor conservatives and change algorithms to influence people to vote in a certain way or cut off their free speech rights. Big tech, in some areas, has not allowed alternative views and has attempted to usher in command and control of thought. That's bad. Number 7, economic freedom is good. Socialism is bad. It's okay to point out flaws from every generation. They all have some. It's not okay to radically revise history. It's not okay to deny the truth of what really happened. In the past 30 years, if you had a public school education, for the most part, you were taught that capitalists were robber barons and you were led to accept a socialistic economic system instead. In fact, over 50% of millennials and younger believe socialism is good. In capitalism, you know, the economic system that enabled the iPhone and the Note 20 Ultra, they think that's bad. 69% say they'd vote for a socialist candidate. The reality of recent world history is straightforward. Socialism, which leads to communism, is very bad. We have multiple examples of how bad it is when socialists are in total command of a society. Yet, a survey of millennials in Britain, Australia, and the US found that only 34% know who Stalin is. That's the atheist communist guy who murdered 20 million people. And only 21% of millennials know about the atrocities of Mao, the Chinese ruler of the Communist Party. He killed over 40 million people. If you add up the death toll from the European, Chinese, Cuban, North Korean, Vietnamese, and Cambodian communist regime since 1900, the Wall Street Journal estimates that over 100 million people were subject to mass killings. Those who were either executed, died through forced labor, starvation, or during harsh imprisonment. How can that be? Socialism is supposed to be just this gentle concept of redistribution. Well, redistribution is not so gentle. It requires force. And the primary use of force is into a system of thought. And to pull this off, they had to beat down family values and eradicate any Christian notions of family, thrift, virtue, honor, worship, professional growth, or personal liberty. They accomplished this with relearning camps. If you believed in freedom, in individual liberty, well, you were killed, usually by torture. If you hoarded grain to offset the lack, you got killed, usually beaten to death. If you tried to escape the misery, you got killed, usually brutally in front of your family. I mean, there are gruesome pictures and video of these atrocities of mass killings, but these historical facts are almost totally missing from school textbooks. These regimes were started with socialistic political thought. Public school students have been robbed of an honest appraisal of how evil socialism is, all because of the impact of collective guilt and the dismantling of Judeo-Christian values. And this is just 7 of at least 12 challenges. So, many of your parents understandably feel that returning to a place of freedom like it used to be and your kids having an equal shot at the American dream is out of reach. It's not. I believe they can find their God-given destiny, but they have some obstacles. I mean, they will need to navigate upward toward success in spite of the government's inclination to put them under its thumb. They will need to focus their energy to seizing opportunities. They will also need to engage in the fight to shift culture. As a part of their training, in my view, they need to be equipped to incorporate a long-term fight for freedom principles. Our American culture was not long ago primarily decent, optimistic, supportive of merit-based achievement, and promoting individual freedom. But it's now primarily rude, negative, oppressive, and based on collective guilt. And that's not just because of the events of the last year. And it's not just because liberals messed it up. Those sad outcomes are also the culmination of 50 years of conservatives primarily focusing on big elections, national offices, and until recently, most did not have much inclination for school boards, city councils, and university regent type of posts. And we totally abdicated higher education. Here's proof. Sociologists say that most of the 72 million people born in the United States between 1980 and 1995, millennials, are overwhelmingly liberal. They actually fear the ideas on the right, according to socialists. Now, this doesn't apply to everyone, of course, but sociologists say that most millennials dread opinions that are different than theirs. They construe disagreement as hatred. And this helps explain why they can justify widespread cancel culture of hunting, doxing, and shaming those who disagree with their liberal dogma. For example, any opinion that contradicts their apprehension of firearms, masculinity, and even Western civilization is suspect. They love the technology developed in the West and use it to unreservedly express their leftist beliefs, but the wealth they want to redistribute would cannibalize the free market forces that enabled the very inventiveness which created that technology. Now, Gen Zers are a little different. They were born in 1996 and after, and it's predicted that this generation, which is raised in a totally digital world, will be the wealthiest ever. They already make up a stunning one-third of the workforce and unbelievably over $150 billion in U.S. buying power, or 40% of the consumer base. And that causes businesses to hire social scientists to figure out what to sell to them. And social scientists reveal that the Gen Zer believes that millennials have a negative stereotype, so they don't want to be called a millennial plus. They're still somewhat influenceable. They can be persuaded. And this is where there's hope. Your kids can reclaim America. Politically, as bad as it looks right now, based on the pendulum effect, there are some things in our favor. There's an undercurrent of resistance to the liberal takeover. We might even win back the House and Senate in 2022 and have a solid chance of winning back a trifecta in 2024. Between now and then, we may be able to hold off the left from destroying America. And if we can hold them off, we could win back some sensibility. But we can't look at this as a two-year problem where we can take a deep breath and peacefully return to a quiet life. As a general rule, conservatives are independent and don't want to think about the grime of politics that much. And I understand that. But this sometimes causes solid families to have a more of a run and hide mindset. Even with the issue of critical race, it's underexplored. I applaud the parents who are speaking out, but we can't just say we're against something. Yes, we are against brainwashing our children into believing they are racist. That's wrong. But we're also for a balanced, comprehensive, and truthful curriculum. We are not afraid of a healthy, open discussion related to past racism. We believe the best way to root it out is to understand it and embrace it and respect each other, regardless of race. We don't want to shut down the conversation. We just want it honest and balanced. And it's not the whole story of America. There's more to it than that. As homeschoolers, you can use great black thinkers like Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams to help underscore the real issues and promote a balanced understanding. But there's so much more to discuss. Part of taking America back is to be politically engaged, but we don't take America back by just winning elections. There's more to it, and politicians are not always that reliable anyway. We take America back with millions of trained young people who are equipped for long-term engagement. And that requires having a thorough knowledge of current events in light of the American idea. And I try to pull that off in my weekly podcast and video production. We do hours of research, and I try to compress that into about 25 minutes at no cost to you. But it's all about freedom. And all civic freedom rights are derived from the foundational three rights that were explicitly named at the forming of the American idea. What is the American idea? It was pretty novel at the time. I mean, the American idea is that the primary purpose of government is to guarantee God-given rights for its citizens, that all of us are created equal as it relates to freedom rights. And these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, Clarence Thomas went from Marxist to Supreme Court justice as a conservative by thoroughly understanding the words created equal. As a black man, he felt discrimination, but he believed that was just an expression of human frailty and not living up to the explicit words of the Declaration of Independence. So, rather than become a victim, he decided to act and think in accordance with the Declaration. And from his academic work, his term is now the longest-serving Supreme Court justice and the one with the most written opinions. The Declaration is a document that just turned government on its head. For the first time in human history, government would now exist to serve the people. The right to life is the ultimate right. It's the right to be treated equally under the law, period. The right to liberty expresses the notion of freedom of movement and freedom to worship however, whenever you wish, wherever you wish, and the freedom to express yourself in any manner you wish, politically, religiously, as long as it is peaceable. and the amazing right to the pursuit of happiness. This includes the concept that you've got a right to your own labor. I mean, John Locke talked about this a lot. Private property equals you. It's your right to yourself, to your own efforts. In fact, the concept of life, liberty, and private property was originally thought to be what they would say, but that was not used by Thomas Jefferson, though he read Locke's work and was very familiar with it. He replaced it with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, replacing private property with the pursuit of happiness. It is true that you, as a result of the right to pursue happiness, have a right to enjoy your private property. Government could not take from you, a citizen, what was theirs, regardless of how much it had, the citizen had. But it also includes a broader concept of happiness. It's more than money. It includes virtue and personal development. And most importantly, however you as an individual choose to live. So rather than think of yourself as part of a group, what made this phrase so famous was that a government, a new nation, was founded upon the concept that you as an individual choose your own occupation and that you would individually have a right to pursue your own highest aspiration, whatever that might be. This doesn't mean that other people from other parts of the world don't also have ability to pursue their dreams or desire for it, but the government in the United States actually sponsors it. That's why there's not a widely known Austrian dream or Denmark dream or Chinese dream or German dream or Australian dream or Russian dream or Brazilian dream or Egyptian dream. America was founded on a dream, the ability to pursue happiness. And that's why it became known the world over as the American dream. And I know you want your kids to have a shot at living that dream. And you want them to live without fear of harm. You want them to think in terms of what they can do, not what they can't. And to pull that off, to take America back, I believe we can summarize this in three things that we need our kids to be equipped with. Young people, number one, young people need to have a command of current events in light of the three freedom rights we just discussed: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And number two, they need to have an open, accurate, and honest education, able to calmly and confidently hold their ground on any of the hot topics, can handle any controversial discussion. And number three, they need to be equipped to fight for positive cultural change for the long term. May God bless you as you engage in your young people's lives, and thank you for caring enough to make personal sacrifices for their benefit, to your success and your family, and that depends on your freedom.
Hi, I'm David Farah. Thank you for listening to my dad's podcast, The Barry Farah Show, Culture Shift. Click subscribe now to be sure you don't miss an episode. Share this podcast with your friends on social media and give The Barry Farah Show your 5-star rating. Check out today's show notes below this episode and at thebarryfarahshow.com. This podcast is also available in video format at The Barry Farah Show on YouTube. See you next time.